at times is becoming farcical. And you have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form.
For your first chance to hear Brian O'Driscoll on OTB, download the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications.
The Club Championship Show on OTB Sports, in partnership with AIB, proud sponsors of the Football, Hurling and Camogie All-Ireland Club Championships. Hashtag the toughest.
You're very welcome along to the Club Championship Show here on OTB Sports, brought to you by AIB. Coming up on today's show, Owlert the Balla claimed their third AIB All-Ireland Camogie title, downing the reigning champion Sarsfields last weekend. We'll be joined by Owlert forward and four-time All-Star Ursula Jacob to look back on the game at Nolan Park. Sláinte dual player Chrissy McCaig will also be along with us to discuss their latest Ulster success in the hurling final this time round, 4 in 6 years now for the Derry side. Ballyhale Shamrock star-studded forward line making the difference at Croke Park on Sunday afternoon as they overcame Clock Ballacolla to land what's now a record 11th Leinster crown. And we'll also be taking a look back at all of the provincial football semi-finals from the weekend just gone by. Delighted to say, to join me to look back on a feast of action just before Christmas is OTB Sports reporter Killian Whelan. Killian, how are you getting on?
Good, Will. Good to see you celebrating the Christmas already there.
I know, I've got the Christmas tree up and everything nicely set here in OTB's Offaly studio for this week's edition of the Club Championship Show. You were at the Camogie final for us last week, providing the updates on OTB on Saturday, Killian. Really good, intense, physical, honest final, which Owlert the Balla won out in the end, despite the fact I believe you were writing them off during the week last week.
Yeah, I'd be very careful what I have to say now because I know she's listening to me here. But yeah, apparently I was the one that was giving them the motivational talks down in Owlert. I don't think so, judging by the crew that's involved down there. But look, I suppose you were basing it on the form of previous. And, you know, Owlert had gone away for a couple of years and maybe we should have known something was brewing down there. But look, great credit to them, what they've achieved in a quick space of time. You know, it really has rattled along for them in the last 6 to 8 weeks, and you know, Sarsfields were probably coming in a little bit cold now when you look back on things, but of course, yeah, it's great in hindsight now to be able to look at that. But yeah, look, it's a great credit to them, and as you said, we have a lady online that was there right in the thick of it as well. And you know, look, fair play to Owlert. I'm sure there was a wedding put on hold, there was a wedding celebrated or partly celebrated, and I'm sure they celebrated Saturday night to make up for all of that.
And despite the fact they had the wedding on Friday, Killian, they came out of the traps really quickly on Saturday. Like, it was a battling type of performance. This time of year, oftentimes you have to earn a victory. And if you're able to turn over the ball as often as Owlert were, particularly in that first half against Sarsfields, you're going to create chances for your forward line, which ultimately they took, including Una Lacey's hat-trick. And a more varied hat-trick you're unlikely to see, including that kick goal in the second half.
Yeah, wouldn't Jurgen Klopp have been delighted with Owlert the way that they took on that first quarter? I thought the gegenpressing was absolutely massive. I would assume whatever drink was taken on Friday, it must have been all energy drinks or something, because they were just possessed every scenario that they were able to just put pressure on Sarsfields, especially on the half-back line. It put incredible pressure on the whole sweeping system that Sarsfields had, and they just weren't able to get ball in hand at the first time because Owlert didn't allow them. But the goals that Una got, you know, typical Una Lacey goals over the years, phenomenal efforts, great to score a hat-trick in the All-Ireland final. A lady that has cruciate issues, she's a cartilage gone in the knees, you know, phenomenal effort. If anyone wants to see, by the way, that goal, the first goal she got from Una's, from Ursula's pass, phenomenal effort too, to take it under control and then whip it as it came down out of the sky as well, over her right shoulder into the net. A phenomenal goal. The kick goal, I think, was one of my favourites as well, because it just, to me, was Una of old, the way that she, as I said, anything is possible with her, and she knows where the back of the union sack is.
Yeah, it was almost like an extension of the entire game, because she had to win her own possession against a couple of defenders, got that little bit of space. And then, as opposed to trying to pick the ball up or potentially getting hooked if she was having a swing at it, she realised that using her foot was going to be the best option, the most efficient option, to put the ball into the net. In the end, Owlert the Balla winning by 4-8 to 2-9 against Sarsfields, their third title and achieved since 2013. It's been a remarkable golden period for this Owlert the Balla team. Una Lacey spoke to Killian Whelan after the game on Off the Ball from Nolan Park.
Una, I heard there in the offense that you were talking to Dara, you were mentioning podcasts and people writing you off. And I could have been one of those people that wrote you off as an aging team, but talent, I suppose, it always beats hard work, and maybe hard work probably beats talent, I should say. you know, he's brought that in droves here. And, like, that's what I have to say. I was just blown away by your opening quarter. Ultimately, you just really, really get everything out there.
Yeah, and I suppose, like, you know, the podcasts are a bit motivational to us. Like, you know, we would have, Colin would have thrown out a train and said, no one was giving us a chance. And I suppose that doesn't actually bother this team. Like, you know, even, like, back, like, to win Wexford is tough enough. And then, like, we came up against St. Jude's and Thomastown. Like, they were two fantastic teams. Like, you were playing, you know, every week it was tough teams. And you know what? The girls were thriving on it. Like, Mary Connor backs, the two very young girls, like, and they literally were getting better and better every game. Like, so the more matches, everyone was improving and playing well as a team. And I suppose we are the team that we do like to get a quick early start, and if, you know, goals settle teams. And like the engine in midfield, the half back line, the, like, Aidan Brennan was phenomenal again on Siobhan McGrath. Like, and I suppose, like, Aidan, you can put her on the best of the best. Yeah. And like, she wouldn't be rated for a senior, yeah, Mogi in Wexford, but yet we know what Aidan is capable of. And like, you put her on, she was on Tina Hannan last week. Tina Hannan is a super player, Siobhan McGrath is a top class player, and I suppose, like, you know, hard work, and I suppose what you'd say too, like, you know, the want to win. And like, we might never have another opportunity. Like, you're not guaranteed anything in life, and I suppose this is our opportunity today, so we wanted to make the most of it and give Stacey a weekend to really remember. Like, she got married yesterday, come out today, bed early last night, and then come out today and give a player the match performance. Like, it was just phenomenal. So
I'm delighted to say now we've got Ursula Jacob with us. Ursula, genuinely, was there a feeling that the media were against Owler at the ballot? Was it that kind of slight percentage that could be used maybe in getting the team ready for last Saturday afternoon?
No, I wouldn't say so. And I'm not just saying it because Killian is in on the call. But look, I don't think any team, whether it's Owler de Balloch or Sarsfields or whoever, needs an additional motivation. I suppose maybe we were hurting ourselves a little bit by losing a couple of county finals in Wexford. But in the last 2 years, there's just been a different kind of bond. There's been a special bond between our management team and players. And I think we just have maybe relaxed and kind of released all the shackles in the last couple of years, because maybe in previous county finals within Wexford, we were nearly getting, you know, putting too much pressure on ourselves. And yes, there was question marks whether the likes of myself, Mary, Una, etc., were maybe gone past it at this stage. But in the last 2 years, and I said it after the game as well, I've probably never enjoyed my camogie more. I think we've appreciated, you know, the outlet of camogie and sport even more so in these crazy times. And it was the one outlet where, you know, when you couldn't do anything in the last 18 months, 2 years, camogie was just a sense of that you could, you know, be with your friends, whether it was over Zoom or in the pitch. And I just think Owlert really have just given a huge lift to the community, but to ourselves as well, because it was a motivating thing in the last number of months that, yeah, we've been all given so many blows over the last number of months, but the camogie has been the one release for us. And it's just been a brilliant and manic and crazy and busy few months. And in particular, the last 5 weeks, I just can't believe that we've had five huge games, the county final and then the two Leinster and All-Ireland semi and last weekend as well. And we managed to come out on top of all those games with lots going on in between and some serious setbacks as well. So it's a credit to everyone involved, really.
We were chatting to Sarah Donovan last week, and she was talking about the fight even to get this championship played, like it looked last June, until it went to the DRA. And, you know, Sarsfields, your opponents, were also, you know, right to the forefront in making sure this championship was completed. I'm sure you're incredibly thankful that actually every effort was made by the clubs to make sure that these games were played.
Yeah, it is amazing that both Sarsfields and Owlert, you know, reached the final, because credit to Colin Sunderland, our manager, and Hopper McGrath, Sarsfield's manager, they were really pushing it strong. And it wasn't that we were making this expectation or assumption that we were just going to be in the final, because we were looking no past, you know, the first game against St. Jude's in the Leinster. But we wanted to be given the opportunity. And I think, you know, when I look back on the last few games, and Killian will agree, you've seen them as well, they've been of the highest standard. It's been a brilliant showcase for camogie. It was brilliant that the game was shown live on television. The amount of people that had me since the game saying the standard of camogie, the high level of skill on display, you know, it was free flowing enough at stages. And everyone has said that to me. And I think that that can only benefit and promote camogie even further. So I'm obviously thrilled that games did go ahead, and I would say fair play to all clubs involved that really stood by it. And because for a few weeks there, we really thought these games aren't going to happen. And we continued to train right throughout lockdown. This time last year, I remember coming into Christmas and doing Zoom classes with with Rory and Colin, and all 30 of us showed up. There was never any complaints. And at times I'm nearly wondering now how we kept that motivation up, but we really did, you know, and it's a credit to everyone, really.
You must be delighted this run of the last kind of 7 or 8 weeks, where so many games have come week on week, particularly the last five or so, to put in two really big performances in the semi-final and in the final. Probably even to perhaps save your two best performances of the year for when there was no Ireland title there to be grabbed.
Yeah, and I would actually say probably the turning point in our year in the last 5 or 6 weeks was actually that Leinster final with 15 minutes to go. We looked dead and buried. Thomastown were taking control of the game. And I suppose we showed great composure, maybe a sign of true champions, how we didn't panic. Things were going against us. We were against the strong wind. And we made a couple of positional changes and we brought on a couple of subs. And we really dominated that final quarter. And I suppose going into that Schlock-Neil game, we knew we were going to be massively up against it. Schlock-Neil are a brilliant team, a team which we've huge respect for. But we got that really lightning start that we needed. And the same again last Saturday, you know, we really got the crucial scores when it mattered. And I suppose, again, Colin and the management would have said to us, you know, the aim at the start of every game is to get that quick start, get the ball in nice and quick. And we knew our capabilities. You know, I think we got some of our matchups right as well. And we had done our homework on the teams. And I think that all led to a positive performance from the players. And we didn't get too caught up in you know, playing a final. We were very relaxed. Maybe the wedding the day before actually helped that, because we weren't sitting around thinking about the match a whole lot. In fairness, we all wanted to make the effort for Stacey on the day, Shelley being chief bridesmaid as well. So we had no fear that they weren't going to be ready and raring to go. And look at the performance out of the two girls in particular. So I think, you know, actually all of us spending the whole day together on Friday actually probably made things even better, because usually we'd either be working or in school or whatever, whereas we actually spent the whole day together just looking forward to the game on Saturday.
And Stacey and Shelley, like you mentioned their performance there, the platform that they give you from the middle of the park and the way that they're able to carry the ball, like even you look at the second goal, the run is very clever to just keep going when the play is going ahead of them. That is a forward line. You must be delighted to get that kind of ball coming into you.
It's brilliant. Look, Stacey is like an energizer bunny going around the middle of the field. Honest to God, I'm just so grateful I never have to mark her. And it's the same with Shelley, because she's a brilliant person to have play outside you. I'm usually either full or corner forward, but Shelley is always running at a million miles an hour in towards you, and she's always looking for that ball. And, you know, we've always had great confidence in both girls, and, you know, they're fantastic players. You know, they showed huge leadership. Even the fact that the night before Stacey's wedding, we had our final training session. No one expected either of them to be shown, you know, turning up for training. Both of them fully togged out and participated in the training. And that just shows the character of the girls. And that's the one thing I would say about this Owlert de Balloch team, is the massive character within it. You know, girls have been dealt massive setbacks, even Una in relation to her injury. There's absolutely no way she should be still playing. There's definitely no way she should have played the last two games, because she went off in the Leinster final and she was in so much pain. But she never gave in. She tried everything as usual and she got herself back flying fit. And look at the impact she made. And then you look at Mary Lacey, our captain, back after her second child. Karen Atkinson in the subs, you know, back again after her second child. So it's nearly that never give up attitude that I love about these girls. And that's why I love playing with them. And I think that's why I'm still playing for so long, because just that bond that we have within this group is just super special. And it was a real team performance.
You've always had a bond. Yeah, Ursula, you've always had a bond. I would think, looking back at the titles that you obviously won previous, but you've had a younger crew now come into that. So how have you, let's say, tailored your game? Obviously, things have changed, but I'm looking at Anae Curran, what she has obviously brought. You've two very inexperienced, who are now very experienced cornerbacks, as a lot of people would have made out. Aideen Brennan, who did a phenomenal job at the edge of the square as well. You know, what have they brought, let's say, to the table that you've been able to have a new bond, let's say?
Yeah, it's just brilliant. You know, like obviously the core group have been there, you know, for the three All-Ireland wins, and that's been massive. But, you know, like Aideen Brennan and Aoife Dunn, two girls who've gained massive experience this year by winning the Junior All-Ireland with Wexford. And I think that kind of winning and playing in Croke Park on the biggest day of the year has led to them feeling even more confident in their play. I think they're two fantastic players. And Anae Curran, you know, she, you know, and the thing is, the girls, you know, it doesn't matter that I'm that much older than these girls. We all just get along. You know, I bring Aoife Dunn to every match, every training session. She's like my adopted sister at this stage. And we just all get on so well. You know, it doesn't seem to matter. But I find that there's a really nice balance in the team now. You've got that mix of the more experienced girls, and then you've got the more youthful, younger girls coming in. And they've been exposed to marking the likes of me and Una in the forwards, whether it's Katie Roach, cornerback, or Marie O'Dowd. And then Anae Curran is probably on Stacey Keogh every day in training. So they, I suppose the training sessions have massively helped that. And, you know, as I said, we all just genuinely get along. There's lots of times where we might be a bit narky, and the poor management team have to deal with that too. But for the most part, you know, we will soldier on, and we'll always kind of fight for each other on the pitch, and that's what you want in the team.
Ursula, where does this rank? I mean, given you had all the success with Wexford at the turn of the decade just before gone, and then you to have won three titles with Owlett de Ballagh, probably people would have seen the picture over the weekend of you with just sheer tears of joy at the end of the game. Even when you go, I think it's fair enough for me to say 36 at this stage. Like, do you enjoy it that little bit more now, winning a title with your club, as you know you're coming towards the end of your career?
Yeah, without a doubt. Look, when we won the first one, first club All-Ireland back in 2012, probably we all felt, oh yeah, this is going to happen every year nearly. You know, this attitude, you're that little bit more younger, maybe a little bit more naive, thinking, oh yeah, but that's not how it works out. Now, luckily, we have won three All-Irelands, but I would say this is definitely the sweetest. It's the manner in which we won. It's the manner of how this competition actually, you know, got to be played. You know, at times we didn't think it was going to happen. And I suppose you're right. The older you get, I've appreciated every game and every win that bit more. And I think, you know, when I look at that picture now, it was just an outpouring of relief, of happiness, pure joy. I still can't believe we've done it. Because I myself, yes, I always knew we had a talented bunch of girls and a brilliant team. But I wasn't sure, had we maybe gone over the hill at this stage, and were we going to get our chance to play in an All-Ireland club final again? And I know some people were saying, oh, were you disappointed it wasn't in Croke Park? Honest to God, I would have travelled the Sarsfields pitch to play the All-Ireland if it meant we were playing it. So I was just thrilled that we were back in the final. And we said, look, this could be our last time in a final, so let's go out and enjoy it. And I think that's what we did. And I think that's why we got such a brilliant performance on Saturday. So yeah, I definitely think it is the sweetest one.
And just before we let you go and enjoy the Christmas, Ursula, the achievement of where Owlett de Ballagh now sit on the roll of honour, up to fifth place overall, you know, three titles put you right up there with some of the dominant teams of recent years, along with you, with Milford and with Sloughneil. It's a special achievement to have won three, and to have won three over the course of 10 years as well. It just goes to show what a great club you've been over the last decade or so.
Yeah, and, you know, like even, you know, like we've won, 14 county titles, seven Leinster titles as well. So, you know, we're doing fairly okay with the medal haul and that. But I suppose you don't really look at all of that when you're playing. It's more reflecting on it afterwards. But look, I think why this one is such a special one is because, as you said, it's over a kind of a 10-year period that we still stuck at it. We still kept going. Maybe when things were against us, maybe when other teams were maybe dominating and we were looking on saying, God, we'd love to be back again. And I think that's why the last 2 years have been just extra special. And as I said, I've definitely probably enjoyed these 2 years in particular the most out of my whole career. So I think there's lots of other girls on the team and on the panel that feel the same as me, and obviously everything feels extra special when you're winning. But to do it the week before Christmas, I think it just really rounds off a nice year. So yeah, we definitely enjoyed it anyway, and we're still celebrating.
That's a special success just before Christmas week, in the middle of wedding season around Owlett de Ballagh as well. Ursula, thanks a million for joining us on the Club Championship Show.
Thanks, Will.
Right, so that was the All-Ireland Club Camogie Final. It was won in the end by Albert Tabala by 4 goals and 8 points to Sarsfield's 2 goals and 9. Sarsfield's have been hoping to go back-to-back in that one. Una Lacey with a hat-trick, remarkable goals. The kicked goal, which Killian mentioned already, and the flick over the shoulder, which was remarkable from a goal that Ursula Jacob had her fingerprints all over in the first half. Really, really good display. And the Keogh sisters, excellent for Albert Tabala in that game too. In the Ulster Club Senior Hurling Championship Final, we'll have Chrissy McCaig with a little bit later on the programme. Stocknield, for the fourth time in 6 seasons, are the Ulster Club Hurling Champions. They beat Ballycran of Down by 1 goal and 14 points to 10 points. Brendan Rogers with their goal in the game, a game they pretty much dominated from start to end. Cormac O'Doherty, who scored 6 points in all. We remember his performance a few years ago against Na Piarsaigh in the All-Ireland Club semi-finals. Stocknield will now go on to play the Munster champions in the All-Ireland semis on the 23rd of January. The Leinster Club Hurling Championship final, Ballyhale Shamrocks of Kilkenny winning their 11th title, 6-23 to Cluck Ballacolla of Laois, playing in their maiden decider, 14 points. That is a record winning margin in a Leinster final as well. The Kilkenny Kingpins winning by 27 points. And Pat Nolan, GA journalist, pointing out at the weekend, it also took away an unfortunate record for Ballyhale, who had suffered the record defeat going into that game, which is their loss to Birr back in 1991. 2 goals from Colin Fenley, the one he scooped over the goalkeeper, was an incredible goal in particular. Huge firepower from the Kilkenny champions, who nearly lost the week before in the semi-final in the 63rd minute until they got a goal to send it to extra time, and they'll go up against St Thomas of Galway in the semi-finals next month. Before we look at the football, Killian, we might take a look at those two hurling games. Like Ballyhale Shamrock, sometimes, as Omar Little would have said in The Wire, you come with the king, you best not miss. Like, you maybe only get one chance against a team who've been so dominant, and this wave of hurlers from Ballyhale, who many of them haven't lost a game outside of the Kilkenny Championship. That's how good they've been. They're going for 3 All-Ireland titles in a row, and they really flexed their muscles when the space opened up at Croke Park at the weekend.
Yeah, and don't they like the big occasion, Will, because, you know, there's a lot of people reckon that they could have been taken down in Netwatch Cullen Park when they took on Mount Leinster Rangers. St. Rhina's had, I think, the hands around the neck, no question, at Tullamore. And, you know, you've got to say that maybe chances went to begging in both of those to be able to take down Ballyhale, and maybe that's the time that you do take them down in those scenarios. I think they got the fright of their life against St. Rhina's, and they weren't going to let it happen the third time that they were going to find themselves against the ropes. And unfortunately for Cluck Ballacolla, went toe to toe with them. You'd have to credit them, Will, you know, in the early stages there. But once the goal started to flow, it started to hemorrhage a little bit then, and it was all about damage limitation. And Cluck were starting to really struggle, because once Fenley got in the flow at all, and, you know, Mullen and Reid and so forth, and even TJ didn't have a huge influence on the game. Hard to believe they scored 6-23 and he only got 6 points from players' balls. When you look at it, Will, that they, you know, the spread of the score, then they came from everywhere else on the team. I just think Cluck got a little bit caught in headlights, and you know, just probably it hadn't enough in reserve ultimately when you're going up against a big Titanic that is Ballyhale Shamrocks.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen a stacked forward line in Club GAA as we see the forward line that Ballyhale Shamrocks have now. Like, people wondered a few years ago what was going to happen when the likes of Colin Fenley, Michael Fenley was going to retire, as he did after winning the Club All-Ireland back in 2020, that they were going to get players who would age. And the next thing, this new generation of remarkable players come through, and particularly in the forward line. Like, Owen Cody, only a couple of weeks ago, named the Young Hurler of the Year. You've got Adrian Mullen, former Young Hurler of the Year. TJ Reid, Hurler of the Year. Colin Fenley still there on the edge of the square at full forward. That is just the most stacked forward line you could ever imagine.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you're going out then to mark that. You know, it obviously has to enter guys' minds. There's no question about who you're standing up alongside. But, you know, in fairness to Cluck, they didn't stand back and admire them. They took the game into them, as I said, in the early doors. But you just, Ballyhale, you know the open spaces of Croke Park, and they really took Cluck Ballacolla around every inch of it. Like I'd say, there's plenty of lads now know every corner of Croke Park after playing against Ballyhale, because they just didn't stop moving. And when you have, as you said, those four who were able to utilise every nook and cranny, and probably know a few places in Croke Park that others don't know about as well, Will, you know, you'd have to say it was a phenomenal performance. And I would think the way that the shape that they were in last Sunday, I think any team would have struggled to live with Ballyhale. So, you know, let's not say always because it was Clough Ballacolla. I do think that they would have put a lot of teams to the sword in that form last weekend. But it just, I suppose, what added to the disappointment is that obviously it's Clough's first appearance in the Leinster final, having never won a game in the Leinster Championship before this year. What a run that they've been on, you know, and they have to give them some great credit for some of the games that they won and the teams that they took down as well, both the Wexford and the Dublin champions, which is, I think it rates up as a good championship for them. It's just a pity that they're on the end of the biggest losing margin in a Leinster final. But look, take nothing away from what they achieved this year. And yeah, imagine they'll be knocking on the door again in Laois and possibly Leinster now, having learned, I would imagine, a lot of lessons this year for next year's championship. But what do you say about Ballyhale? You know, they're just on the cusp again of another element of greatness. Will, if they're not already great, they have an opportunity, as I said, to really put themselves in the annals if they're to go on and win this All-Ireland.
Yeah, three in a row will be a remarkable achievement for a team that many felt maybe just a few years ago were coming towards the end of a cycle. But from chatting to a few Ballyhale people a couple of weeks ago, their feeling is that there's minor players still coming through who we haven't seen with Ballyhale and Kilkenny, and that they could well end up just recycling that team and being successful over a prolonged dominant period of time. It's up to St. Thomas of Galway to try and stop them in the All-Ireland semi-finals next month. That should be a cracker. Conor Cooney's been one of the best hurlers in the country, especially in these AIB club championships. He was brilliant in the Galway Championship this year. We'll stick with Leinster, Killian. Let's have a look at the results firstly from the Leinster Club Senior Football semi-finals. A lot of people probably saw these on TV on Saturday afternoon. In the end, it was a win for Naas of Kildare against Chemeliers of Wexford. After extra time, 2:15 to 1:13, the Wexford champions, playing just their third game in Leinster at senior level, will probably feel that they left it behind them. They were ahead at half time by 1-6 to 6 points, were leading with 10 minutes to go until Naas got themselves a goal, which brought it right back into the melting pot when Dara Kerwin found the net. Naas were able to force extra time with 39-year-old now Eamon Callaghan, who we'll hear from in a moment, scoring the point that sent it to extra time. And then, Killian, one of the talking points that came from last week, and I was tweeting David Goff, the All-Ireland final referee, over and back about it too, that it seems very unfair to me, at least, that you get a black card late in the game, as happened with Chemeliers. They had to play the first, I think, 7 minutes of extra time a man short, while Naas had a red card, but yet it goes back to 15 men for them once the game finishes at the end of 60 minutes. So a period where Naas were actually very dominant in the first half of extra time, Chemeliers were playing a man short. Like, to me, it seems crazy that you're not punished for getting a red card in normal time, but the black card will carry into extra time.
Yeah, it's one of the anomalies of it. And obviously, again, Will, you'd have to feel wasn't thought out when it was ultimately introduced. I don't understand, if you go down to 14 men, why you're allowed to bring back the numbers. It's always been a bugbear of mine with this rule. I'm sure there was some element of sympathy in it or whatever with whenever it was introduced, that the extra time would be unfair in the team, that if they were to get the extra time, that they were still down a player. But look, Will, you suffer the red card, you have to suffer the consequences. And it's bizarre that you could, as I said, have a worse offence, and yet you're the one that ultimately has the numerical advantage then when it came about. It probably doesn't happen too often that you could see the balance, but definitely that was an occasion that was seen. And as you rightly said, you know, Naas got dominant in that opening few minutes of this extra time, and that's when obviously Chemeliers were, I would imagine, Will, taking on a little bit of water. You know, they were probably feeling in themselves that they had lost it, because, you know, 10 seconds to go, they were a point up, and then probably a foul that maybe shouldn't have been, you know, taken by the Chemeliers guy, that could have worked it, I think could have held on a little bit longer rather than committing the offence that they did, especially when you have someone like Eamon Callaghan on the opposition, and they could have seen it out. So I just wonder, psychologically affected by that, and then knowing as well that they were down a player, I just think it was an awful lot of hurt to take on their shoulders, and Naas definitely made the hay when they had the opportunity.
You're living in Kildare. Like, this Naas journey is quite remarkable to have switched to a player-manager model midway of the season. Like, Owen Doyle's doing a really good job. They're scoring a lot now since they've come out of the county. A lot of young players to bring off the bench. Like, the goal that was scored late on in the game, like, that was such a remarkable finish. I know it was kind of swung their way, but Dermot Hannafin comes off and has full confidence in himself to hit the back of the net. And he's one of those young players now, you know, coming in and getting a chance. Naas have scored pretty freely in the Leinster Championship so far. Is there a feeling that if they can keep 15 men on the pitch for that final in a couple of weeks' time, that they can actually go and give it a good shot against Kilmacud, who are now still the favourites to win the All-Ireland Championship?
Well, you see, despite the fact that Nace, it would have been their first time in Leinster, they probably were the favourite going into all three matches that they have played in the Leinster campaign. So this will be a game that they, I don't think, will be the favourites. Obviously, you're up against Kilmacud, who have All-Ireland medals in their back pocket. So I would think that that might suit Nace. They've also got the Croke Park thing out of their system, although there's none of them a stranger to Croke Park. There's an awful lot of younger guys there who have played under 20 with Kildare in Croke Park. They've played Kildare senior with, in Croke Park. They've also got to play in the Hogan Cup final with Nace CBS in Croke Park. So Croke Park was never, I don't think, going to be a major factor for any of those guys. But I do think now there's a different pressure on them going into the final, which might actually ease an awful lot. And I think the pressure more so, the favourites tag anyway, is going to be on Kilmacud Crokes. The thing with this Nace team is, Will, these guys haven't just come out of nowhere. You know, like we've been waiting in Kildare for these guys to come knocking for the last 5-6 years. I would have been involved with a couple of underage teams here with a club in Kildare. And Nace was, you know, to the detriment of any team I was involved with. You give them a game, you might be able to beat them once or twice, but you know, you never bet them too many times, I have to say. And those guys, you know, you're talking about the, as I said, just goes to show you the skill of Dermot Hannafin coming off the bench. But there's a plethora of young players there that have claimed Kildare titles all the way up at underage level. And, you know, it's probably been something of a mystery in Kildare that Nace have taken as long as they have to actually win a senior football title. But now that they're doing it out in Leinster, I think they are expressing themselves a little bit. Now, you know, they've had to live dangerously. They could have lost the first day against Tullamore. They were dominant enough against Blessington, could have lost and probably should have lost against Shelmaliers. And, you know, now they're riding their luck a little bit. And I think to win titles, you need that little bit of luck. And yeah, they seem to be getting it.
All right, let's hear from Eamon Callaghan then. He spoke to Eoghan Sheehan on Off the Ball earlier this week about eventually breaking the hoodoo for him after many defeats in Croke Park with Kildare.
I was chatting to Eoghan Doyle after the game, and he immediately made the point in his first answer that he's endured a lot of tough days in Croke Park. Like, when you throw on the White Hill there, obviously, with Dublin's dominance in recent years, it has been, I presume, a tough enough hunting ground as not only a Nace player, I suppose you hadn't played there with Nace, but as a Kildare player, mostly, Eamon.
Yeah, like most of it, and especially it was all like the big games really that you were playing Kildare have been disappointing, you know, like the Leinster finals, the All-Ireland quarterfinals, you know, the All-Ireland semi-finals we played in. A lot of the games we'd won up there with Kildare, you know, would have been maybe qualifier games, or, you know, we would have won the early rounds of Leinster maybe, you know, over the years. But I suppose, yeah, the big kind of games that you would remember being a Kildare player playing at Croke Park, like a lot of them didn't go our way, so it was nice to finally get one, a kind of a big day in Croke Park that finally did go our way. But yeah, no, it hasn't been a great hunting ground for like myself and Eoghan there, like who's been playing, like, you know, for Kildare for the last few years.
Does it feel like maybe an exorcism of sorts of those bad memories in Croke Park, getting such a hugely emotional win on Saturday?
Yeah, well, like just personally, it did. Like, you know, for me, it did, I suppose, because I never would have thought I'd ever play there again, obviously, competitively. So, you know, and just the way the game unfolded, I suppose, was an extra kind of, you know, added an extra bit of kind of emotion to it as well at the end. And at the final whistle, like, you know, it's hard to explain, because you're trying not to think about those kind of things before the match. But I suppose looking back on it, it was the first time, obviously, Nace had played in Croke Park. There was a lot of players who, on our team, obviously, who have never played there and never experienced that, that kind of feeling of playing in Croke Park. And it was a massive day for them. It was a massive day for our club. And we were just delighted that we were able to somehow kind of come back in the last 10 minutes and turn around that game.
Well, Killian, it's going to be Nace against Kilmacud Crokes in the final. Kilmacud overcoming Port Arlington in one of the games of the weekend, probably right up there. We'll talk about Glen and Kilcoo in a moment. But Kilmacud against Port Arlington, really good game. Kilmacud won 111 in the end, to 111 to 12 points against Port Arlington. It was that goal by Keane O'Connor that made all the difference. A very clever finish at the near post. But, you know, for a team, Kilmacud, who found themselves 7-3 down at half time, in a little bit of trouble with the chances that they were giving up. They kicked, I think, 18 wides over the 60 minutes, which was very wasteful by their usual standards. They still, in that second half, were able to turn the screw when Port Arlington got a little bit tired. And, you know, crucial to the victory for Kilmacud really was pushing up on Osborne's kickouts from Port Arlington and actually putting the press really onto them in that third quarter of the game.
Yeah, that was ultimately where it was decided, I think. And you just, you'd have to wonder about the, what was the plan B on the kickouts from a Port Arlington point of view, because, you know, Osborne looked really at sea a little bit on occasion of what to do with the ball. The short ones weren't working. Then he went long and they were coming back in on him. And there was a couple of missed ones as well that resulted in goal opportunities and subsequently led to scores. You know, I don't think the Port defence would want to see the Keane O'Connor goal again. You know, I think he could have been dealt with at a very early stage and then was able to squeeze it in from the angle that he did. It still took that goal, though, Will, to beat Port Arlington. So that's got to tell you, you know, Port really were dogged enough in quarters. I think they gave everything of themselves, and that's, you got the credit, you know, the management team and the players, that they came to Croke Park. I don't think we're standing around looking up in the sky yet while we're here in Croke Park. They really took it to Kilmacud, and great credit to Port Arlington. As you and I know, I think both of us were backing them as maybe a dark horse to be able to win this Leinster title. And, you know, we've seen what they've been able to achieve this year alone, because obviously they've won the 2020 and 2021 championship in Laois. You know, they're going to be a team, I think they'll be there on a pedestal in Laois to be knocked off of now. And this experience, I would imagine, in Leinster will obviously stand to them as well. And I think they could be a team that we might be talking about next year and the year after, Will, coming out into the Leinster campaign. They, you know, they won't, you know, be shy, I would imagine, in expressing themselves. I don't know, ever know a Port Arlington team that have shied away from a challenge. So that performance of this year could stand to them next. But you'd have to credit Kilmacud. I think they just, you know, they know how to win big games. Ultimately, they have all Ireland medals going back to the clubhouse. So, you know, they know what they're about. They didn't panic, even though, as I said, they kicked a phenomenal amount of wides. You'd have to credit Robbie Pickett on the job that he did on Paul Mannion, but credit Mannion. He stayed in the game, and then kicked a couple of big ones when they did. Just go back to one thing, though. Credit Port, Will, for mounting the challenge that they did after Keane O'Connor's goal. They hit the next 2 points. I just think the exertion then to be able to get ahead again just, I think, came back on them a little bit. And ultimately, Kilmacud were able to see it out. I think that game will stand to Kilmacud, but I think it's setting up a fascinating final.
It really is. And the Port Arlington manager, Martin Murphy, saying afterwards they've had 9 positive COVID cases over the last 2 months, which really hurt their chances going into last weekend. And he pointed out that 3 or 4 of the players who were cramping in the second half had only recently recovered from COVID-19 in the last 2 weeks. So that will probably be an issue throughout the rest of the championship that we'll see rear its head again. Let's hear from Robert Brennan then, the manager of Kilmacud, who spoke about how crucial that goal was for his side in qualifying for the AIB Leinster Club Final.
Goal was some finish.
Yeah, I didn't even think it was on, to be honest with you. And obviously he did the same in the Dublin final, and we're joking saying he'll have to be on the bench again for the next day. But he's a phenomenal player with all Ireland medals in his back pocket, so he's some experience to bring in there. Yeah.
What are the A versus B games like in training?
Yeah, they're good. They're good because we've brought some of the minors up as well. So we've probably 35, 36 in squad at the minute, so that the internal games on Saturday mornings are quite heavy and intense, which is great. We need that. Yeah.
35 minutes until Paul Mannion got on the score sheet today. I'm sure you didn't doubt him for 1 second. I'm not sure, what did he finish up at, 3 or 4 in the end? But
yeah, I think 3 or 4 in the end, but that's Paul, isn't it? He'll find a space in his yard. It's you know, and he's working so hard. He's a threat every time he gets it from an opposition point of view, so we're delighted to have him.
Probably adds a little few extra inches to his game as well once he's playing here in Croke Park, a ground he knows so well, and also the wider environment as well. He's so good from range.
Yeah, he is, and he's probably proved that the last day in Park Talton as well. He obviously knows his place very well, and a few of the other guys as well would have played here as well, so it wasn't too much of a leap for them to come in here and suddenly play out there. Yeah.
So that is the Leinster Club Football Final, which is coming up on the weekend of the 8th and 9th of January. So a quick enough turnaround for the players from both Kilmacud Crooks and from Naas. We've got the Munster Club Football Final now in Stone as well. Two reasonably one-sided semi-finals as things worked out. Austin Stacks winners against Newcastle West of Limerick by 1-15 points to 1-7. It's a game that really Stacks had won by half-time. They were 9 points to 1 up at the break. Darragh O'Brien scoring 8 points. And the story really was that every time Newcastle West fouled him, he put the ball over the bar for the Kerry champions and punished them every single time. Newcastle West going into that game on the back of their 2-point win against the Nair of Waterford in the quarterfinals of the competition. And the goal coming in the 42nd minute, Brendan O'Sullivan flicking the ball into the net for Austin Stacks as they went through to a decider to play against real club royalty here in St. Finbar's of Cork. A team who've won All-Ireland titles in both hurling and football. We have to go back a bit into the past for the Bar's real golden period, but their first Munster senior football final since 1986. Victors against Air Og of Clare, who had knocked out Lochmore Castellini after extra time in the quarters. It was the Bar's 2 goals and 14 points, Air Og 12 points. And, you know, Killian, we talk about players coming in and potentially enriching clubs along the way. Conor McCrickert from Down, look what he's added to Finbar's there. Really good throughout the Cork Football Championship. And he scores 2 goals in the first half, which ultimately proved the difference between the sides.
Yeah, and, you know, the Bar's, as you mentioned, the first Munster final since 1986. It really brings back memories of their quality and what they've, you know, as you said, the royalty that they've brought to the game. But, yeah, just, you know, I suppose somebody coming into a team that has a little bit of quality and maybe something that the club necessarily didn't have, which might have been a goal getter. And, you know, he took his goals exceptionally well against Air Og. And, you know, as you mentioned, a bit one side in the games. In fairness to Air Og, you know, they did stick with them as long as it was possible. But, you know, those goals were obviously hard to go and to come back by. But, like, you know, McCrickert came away with 2-1. And, you know, that's effectively the gap between the sides. So, you know, look, he's obviously added that little bit extra to the team. And, you know, the Bars might fancy their chances now. There's no doubt about it. They would have always, you know, as a club, would have, you know, had that little bit of arrogance about them or whatever. I'm sure they're up against a side that carry a little bit of arrogance as well. And I can't wait to see what the ultras from Austin Stacks bring to the party. But, hey, you know, look, it's credit to Bars. You know, McCrickert has obviously made difference. But look, word as well for Stephen Sherlock also. He chipping in with 9 points there. A phenomenal return out of 2:14.
Yeah, he's brilliant in the Cork Championship. Tommy and I were having a look at it. Like, he found himself outside the Cork panel for the last season and a bit, but there's a very strong chance he comes back in. He was the top scorer in Cork this year, and he's carried that form into Munster. And, like, across that forward line, all bar 1 point was scored by their inside forward line. And perhaps crucially, Killian, when they get ready to play against Austin Stacks, Finbar's, by contrast to Kilmacud Crokes, had one wide in the entire 60 minutes. That's a remarkable efficiency.
Oh, no question. Over a whole hour of championship football, it just tell you, as you said, talk about their inside forward line, the chances that they took, but that they made hay with every opportunity that came in their direction. You know, that kind of scenario would see Finbar's, to me, might get a slight nod here with regards to their performance. Will, you know, Newcastle West, I have to say, were authors of their own misfortune in lots of ways, because some of the fouling was criminal, you'd have to say, and an awful lot of it made very, very easy for Dara O'Brien. I'm not sure the Finbar's defence will be, you know, creating him and giving him a Christmas present, even though it'll be into the new year. I don't think they'll be handing him over any easy presents in a Munster final. So, look, it creates a fascinating contest, but I think Stacks, you know, will obviously have to bring some of their recent experience, and some people might say that will ultimately give them the nod, but the Bars might be just timing a bit of a run here, Will.
Yeah, before we talk about the AIB Ulster Club Hurling Final, which was won by Sláinte against Ballycran, we'll talk about the two football semi-finals, and if we can start with the really heavyweight one, Killian, Kilcoo coming through against Glen. After extra time, 1 goal and 11 points to 11 points. Jerome Johnson's goal ultimately proving the difference in extra time for Kilcoo, the 2019 champions and the beaten 2020 All-Ireland finalists against Cora Finn. On the show, we've spoken about how good Kilcoo have been, how impressive they've been. We've seen them on TV a few times now in recent weeks. But Glenn, you know, coming out of Derry for the first time, gave them a right old rattle on Sunday afternoon.
Oh yeah, no question about it. And it could have very easily went Glenn's way as well. But I thought it was an awful cagey affair, Will. It was really a chess match for so long, you know, and if anyone got a little bit in front, it was pegged back by the other. And, you know, as we said, it went inevitably, I think. I called it going to extra time, I think about 20 minutes before the end of the game. It just had that kind of feel ultimately about it. And you just felt a goal was ultimately going to turn it. And Johnson took his goal exceptionally well. You know, Kilcoo again, they've been in these stages before. Will, you know, just in recent form, I think getting to an All-Ireland final and maybe they felt that they left a, you know, not a great performance behind them at Croke Park. I think they have that kind of feel about them that they want to get back and right a few wrongs. I think I know it's still a few games away from getting to that opportunity, but they might be just building up a little bit of a head of steam. Credit Glenn, I would have had them myself, and you know, I was thinking about Glenn and Port Arlington maybe were going to be, you know, dark horses maybe to come out into an All Ireland series. But you know, look, Kilcoo, when it mattered, just had enough to be able to do, get them, as I said, into another Ulster final.
And Derry Gonley Harps of Fermanagh making the start of the weekend in their win against Clonairn of Armagh. 3-11 to 1-11 in the end. But the Fermanagh champions, who are now into their first ever Ulster Club Senior Football Final, they scored 3 goals and 2 points in the opening 13 minutes. Shane McGullion with 2 goals and Conal Jones fisting the other early on in the game. And like, you can't have wished for an 11-point lead to no score early on in the game. They couldn't have hoped for any better start against Clon at the weekend, Killian.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I'd imagine, I know it's Derry Gonley's first Ulster final, but, you know, they seem to play with a team that has the experience of playing in the Ulster Championship. And I think Clonairn, I think, suffered a little bit on that. And, you know, I think Derry Gonley, maybe it was in their armory or maybe it was in their game plan. Let's test these guys out early doors and see, could we maybe rattle it back of the net and see what they're made of. And, you know, I don't think they would have expected though to be able to get the return that they did. I think Clonairn were very naive in those opening stages. And, okay, credit to them, they made a game of it at least anyway for the second half, to be able to chip back into it. And, you know, when McGullion was sent off, it obviously, you know, could have been a little bit closer. But, you know, I think Derry Gonley were flattered enough by the 6-point victory that they had.
Yeah, it was back to 4 points at the second water break, but Derry Gonley Harps were able to kick the last couple of points of the game and get out by 6 in the end. It's going to be a really good final. That is Kilcoo against Derry Gonley Harps. And, you know, Derry Gonley having knocked out Tramore of Tyrone in the first round of the competition. I'm really looking forward to this. I still think Kilcoo are going to be a major force in the All-Ireland Championship. But maybe, you know, Derry Gonley, who've won 6 of the last 7 in Fermanagh, can actually turn them over when it comes to the final. That's one to really look forward to when we come round to next month. So a reminder then of the results from the weekend just gone by. Those Ulster Club football semi-finals. Derry Gonley Harps of Fermanagh 3-11. Clonairn of Armagh 1-11. Kilcoo, the defending champions, back into the final to play Derry Gonley in the next round. They won against Glen of Derry after extra time by 1-11 to 11 points. The semi-finals in the Munster Club Football Championship then, Austin Stacks of Kerry 1-15. Newcastle West of Limerick 7 points. St Finbar's of Cork 2 goals and 14 points. Airog of Clare 12 points. In those Leinster Club Football semi-finals, Kilmacook Crokes, the current favourites to win the All-Ireland on All-Ireland final day, they beat Port Arlington of Laois by 1-11 to 12 points. It took extra time to separate Naas and Shamaliers, but the Kildare champions Naas coming through against their Wexford opponents 2-15 to 1-13. The Leinster Club Hurling Championship final, an 11th title for Ballyhale Shamrocks, who will go on now to a semi-final against St Thomas of Galway. They beat Cluck Ballacolla of Laois by 6 goals and 23 points to 14 points. And in the Ulster Club Senior Hurling Final, Slochneil of Derry winning against Ballycran of Down by 1 goal and 14 points to 10 points. It's a remarkable run for Slochneil, particularly since 2016, their fourth provincial crown in hurling. I'm delighted to say that Derry footballer and Slochneil dual player Chrissy McCaig is with us now. Chrissy, how are you getting on?
Good, thanks, Paul. Good.
This is a remarkable run for the club that you're on currently. You know, you make hay while a club is doing well. But if you take the football titles that you've won in the decade just gone by as well, and now this hurling run that you're on within the province, this is a remarkable time for Slochneil, really.
Yeah, look, it is. And it's been over quite a period of years now. And I suppose even, you know, last year, we were disappointed that we didn't get to go to Ulster because we had won the football and hurling titles. This year, we're beating the football final. So we're never really that far away. But I suppose one of the most interesting parts of it for me is the fact that whilst we've been, you know, very, very competitive and have won quite a lot of stuff, there's been a good few bad days mixed into that too. So it's a good sign of us that we haven't just got it all our own way, but we've always kept coming back, finding a way to, you know, almost reinvent ourselves. So we were delighted to get over the line on Sunday now because we just felt that we needed another crown because last year we didn't get a chance to defend our title. And the year before that, we were going very, very well and felt we probably left one behind us against Ballyhale too. So looking forward to what January brings, because we feel that we're in a fairly good position.
Yeah, not to get too far ahead of yourselves, because you have to wait for this Munster final to be played, and there's a bit of a gap really between now and January the 23rd for the All-Ireland semi-final. But you know, given that you've put in very credible performances against both Ballyhell Shamrocks and against Na Piarsaigh in recent years in All-Ireland semi-finals, the next step probably for Sláinte is to get over the line in one of these semi-finals.
Yeah, it is. And I think if you're looking at it logically, the performances against Ballyhale and the Piarsaigh, you know, there was parts of them games that we're winning. But ultimately, it's the lack of exposure to playing them sort of teams in the north that has maybe hindered us a wee bit, with all due respect. And then you mix in the fact that a lot of our boys would play football a lot more throughout the year than hurling. And that's not opinion, that is fact. Quite a few boys in the senior football team, obviously our senior football team in the club's going quite well, has went quite well. So it's just about getting more hurling miles under the body in some respects. And we've really focused on hurling since the county football final defeat against Glen. And now we get another block of hurling before the Lauren Hurling semi-final. So I think that should stand us in good stead. But ultimately, you're right, we've got to go out on the day and perform and get over the line. And, you know, there's no bad teams left in the competition either. So we're very much aware of the challenge that lies ahead.
Is it difficult to find that balance as well, Chrissy, between the two sports? Like, I mean, naturally, there's a huge overlap with fixtures and trying to be right week on week. But we saw a few dual clubs win titles this year, like Lochmore Castellini, like Naas, Kilmacook Crokes. And these teams have gone on and done reasonably well in the provincial championships too. But I guess, given that with Sláinte, you've got a fair old crossover of players there, it's got to be difficult to try and balance the two championships, hasn't it?
Oh, it is. And there's no point in getting away from that. And whilst there is a magic that exists, being a dual club and being successful as a dual club, I mean, I suppose it's only when you look back on and actually like do a bit of reflection that to win provincial crowns in football and hurling as a club is some achievement. But I suppose when you've done it a few times, you become more ambitious. And we've already been to a club All-Ireland football final twice. We haven't that same position as a hurling club yet, but it does get difficult. We have a huge number of dual players, and we have a relatively small pick of players that are feeding both the hurling and football squad. So it's never ideal. And I think the sooner you accept that it's not ideal is when you can sort of take that burden off yourself. But ultimately, it is easier competing in one without the other. And I would still rather be in both, but we've probably got to try and really go for it now when we have only one focus. And I think we have proven over the last number of weeks that when we have one focus, we're a fairly decent hurling team, you know.
I was reading you saying last week as well that it may well come to a point at club level where you might have to concentrate on one or the other at some point. Like, you're 32 now at this stage. You've committed to going back in with the Derry footballers for next year. You've been playing kind of nonstop really with Derry since you got back from Australia. It's a lot of miles to put on the clock. Is it genuinely that kind of difficult decision that you might have to make at some point about one or the other then?
Yeah, absolutely. And I would always try and be upfront about them type of things too. Rather, like, you can keep your cards close to your chest, but ultimately it's going to come down to a common sense decision. And I suppose for me now, the fact is you want to try and get the best out of yourself. And there's no doubt about it. As a dual player, it's very, very difficult to perform at your very, very best in both codes. And for me, that's a very, very frustrating thing. But I suppose you're kept at it because of the brilliance of the squad that exists around you in the club in both hurling and football. But look, that's not a decision for right now. It's obviously something that's going to come down the line. I want to try and play county football for as long as I can. And I want to try and serve that the best way I can too. But look, our club is very, very good at monitoring the dual players, probably as good as they can be. But right now, it's almost probably a good thing to have in terms of that you only have one focus, and especially in a game like hurling, because your technical aspect needs to be brushed up fairly high, especially going against the likes of Kilmallock, Ballygunner, Ballyhale, St Thomas, etc., etc. So it's just nice to have that one focus, and looking forward to what the new year can bring with it.
We did, Bradley. Sorry, go on, Gillian.
Chrissy, can I just ask you, as regards, like, even with the Camogie have obviously got out and won All-Ireland titles, the club, you were probably safe to say, I think, everyone's favourite second club in the country. And I don't think anyone would begrudge you if you were to come out and, you know, take an All-Ireland title. Does that in any way carry in a pressure? Because I'm just listening to you there about, you know, you feel that maybe you didn't do yourselves justice in one or two of those semi-finals, you know. Are you carrying a little bit of pressure on that?
I suppose you, like, I can only speak from what I feel within the group, and I think it's a real drive to actually drive on, because ultimately against the Perisha and Ballyhale, no one gave us a chance. So I don't come away from that game thinking, oh, there was one that got away. I think especially from the Napiershire game was a real understanding that we've arrived at the top table and that we're able to compete with the big boys, which is no mean feat, like, considering where we have came from. So the ambition burns strong, but no, I don't feel it's pressure, to be honest with you. But ultimately, you would rather take an All-Ireland title if it came your way. But we're in a different position in hurling than we are in football, because we've reached the last game in football. I feel we should have took an All-Ireland crown in football against Dr. Crokes the last time. Very, very, very small margins against a very, very good team. But our hurling's just coming along nicely. And I feel if we keep going on the same pattern that we're going, I feel that our hurling, you know, in 2-3 years time will be better than it is now, looking at the age profile, looking at the experience, etc., etc. But as we all know, timing and sports everything, and you take the chances when they come along. So it's another opportunity in January, and look, we'll be throwing absolutely everything at it to make sure it counts on that day.
What do you do now in the next couple of weeks to be able to get to that level? You're talking about maybe, you know, no disrespect to Ballycran, the quality that you've met. So what are you going to be able to do between now and meeting the Munster champions to be able to get to that level?
Very, very simple, but something that we don't get a huge amount of, hurling. Trying to juggle both throughout the year is very, very difficult. And we just need to keep brushing up on the technical, because Kilmallock, Ballygunner will have more hurling miles in themselves than we would have. And to be honest, it'll just be one sole focus, getting as much training under our belts as possible, being together as much as we can, and just hurling, because that's what works for us. And we'll take it as a 5-week block or a 6-week block, whatever it is, and just try and get as much into the system as possible, because we know if we can do that, we're definitely going to be competitive. And then after that, it's about who can produce their best performance on the day. So it's not new territory, which I think helps too. We have a lot of experience now. And I think when you get into these positions, experience does count for a bit, you know.
Is it a good or a bad thing to have that month then? Because your opponents will have played an awful lot closer to the All-Ireland semi-final. On the one hand, you guys get to enjoy the Christmas after beating Ballycran. You know, you've got your provincial title and you can, you know, put the foot to the floor preparation-wise for the next month. But would you prefer, maybe in theory, to have a game a bit closer to the All-Ireland semi-final? Like, on the face of it, a month seems a long time to have to fill in.
It is, but I suppose for us, you know, we're coming off the back of a long year. Well, you know, in terms of a lot of players have played hurling and football for Derry. The period there from about, I would say, August to mid-November was unbelievably intense. There wasn't too many weekends we didn't have a hurling or football game. So I think for us, it's probably a good thing mentally more than anything else. We'll still get a good block of training done over Christmas. And I think it's mentally refreshing for us not to have any big games lingering on our minds in the close proximity. So no, I'd be happy enough with it, to be honest with you, because again, probably situation to most in the fact that we've played a huge number of games in the last couple of months in hurling and football. And I think sooner rather than later, mentally, you just want rid of games and you just want a chance to get away from it. And almost in a way, training becomes almost a different feeling because you haven't got the thought of a game in the immediate future. So we'd be happy enough to have the Ulster crown in the bag. And then just looking forward to an All-Ireland hurling semi-final because, I mean, we would never have thought in our club history 10 years ago or even more that we would be in this position. I think in the last 9 years between hurling and football, Derry and Ulster, we've won 21 championships, which is just phenomenal. That's not including All-Ireland football final appearances, All-Ireland hurling semi-final appearances also. So, like, we've got to show a bit of gratitude for what we've done, because it's been absolutely phenomenal in many ways.
Yeah, sometimes you can only really reflect on your medals when your career is over. You don't kind of think about them until you've actually finished up. But I'm sure as you go into the Christmas period now and you've got a bit of time probably to reflect, like even for you personally now, you've got 7 medals in Ulster across hurling and football. Like to have done that over the last 9 years and all the Derry championships added in on top of that, like that is just a remarkable run of winning that your club has been on.
Like absolutely. And I was someone mentioned me during the week about Kilcoo also, and about, you know, the fact that they had been chasing the Ulster crown for so long, and then Mickey Moran came in. But like they have won 8 or 9 in a row in Down, which is a phenomenal feat too, considering Down, you know, Down's a football and stronghold as a county too. So look, sometimes you can get caught up, you're right, in chasing something, chasing the absolute pinnacle, and forget like what you've done is absolutely record breaking in many ways too. So a wee bit of gratitude does keep you grounded, and look, no matter what happens in my career or in Slán Éagla's future, if it was to stop right now and then, you could still take a lot of satisfaction at what we've done. And I think, I suppose too, we're a real success story in the fact that we've promoted hurling and football, and we've shown that, you know, both can work. If you've got that unbelievable passion and that unbelievable drive, like, to make it work. And you know, that's been showcased around the country and a few other occasions this year too, which is good.
Chrissy, enjoy the Christmas and enjoy watching the Munster final for a bit of scouting in a couple of weeks' time to get ready for that game coming up on the 23rd of January.
Thanks very much. Pleasure. Thank you.
So that was Chrissy McCaig of Sloughneil, looking back in their win against Ballycran last week and looking forward to their semi-final against the Munster champions, which is coming up next month. We won't have a club championship show with AIB next week. We're taking a 1 week break while the clubs are off. We'll be back on the 5th of January for our next show. Looking forward to what's going to be a very busy weekend of provincial finals in the AIB Club Championships. On Saturday, the 8th of January, you've got that Leinster Club Senior Football Final in Croke Park at 5 p.m. Kilmacud Crokes of Dublin against Naas of Kildare. And then on Sunday, the 9th of January, we'll get to find out who Sloughneil's opponents are going to be in the All-Ireland Semi-Finals. Munster Club Senior Hurling Championship Final, Kilmallock of Limerick against Ballygunner of Waterford. It'll be in Porkycueve at 3:30 on that Sunday. And we'll also have the Connacht Club Senior Football Final. Want to really look forward to Knockmore of May up against Pádraig Pearses of Roscommon, the beaten 2019 finalists. That game will be in Ballina at 1:30 on Sunday, the 9th of January. Killian Whelan, thanks a million for joining us for the first time on the Club Championship show.
Thanks indeed, Will. Thanks for having me.
And Killian will be keeping us up to date on matches on OTB Sports over the next while as well. I want to wish you all, for watchers and listeners to the podcast, a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And we'll see you again for our next show on the 5th of January.
The Club Championship Show on OTB Sports in partnership with AIB, proud sponsors of the Football, Hurling and Camogie All-Ireland Club Championships. #TheToughest.